You're now locked in to HBCU Pulse. We're the number one outlet for HBCU life, talking about everything that's important to our culture, from on-campus issues to politics and what's trending on the yard. We always keep that same energy. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and the host of HBCU Pulse Radio, in the building for another special edition of the show on today. And this is specifically for the HBCU Pulse Radio podcast family, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Odyssey, wherever you get your podcast. Man, listen, I appreciate you for rocking with HBCU Pulse and listening to the show. We've been going crazy ever since January 6th. We've had a lot of amazing, impactful shows about politics, about food insecurity, about life after student leadership, which a lot of us that are listening to this podcast are all dealing with. So I'm super excited to take these next few weeks before the football season, because we're going to be talking a lot about football season, to highlight phenomenal alumni that are making it happen. This week on the show, we interviewed Jonathan Wallace. He's a Grambling State University alum, former SGA president, and he was a Grambling State University football player, and he was SGA president and a football player at Grambling at the same time, the same year. I was super excited to talk to him. He was a part of the HBCU Experience Movement's book, The HBCU Experience, the Grambling State University Edition. It's on Amazon right now. I was interviewing him for that book. So we talked about a lot of amazing things. So I want you all to check it out. But really quickly, before I toss to the interview, I want to let the podcast audience know of a big announcement. And if you follow me on social media at Author Randall B on all platforms, you probably already know this, so I'm not telling you anything different, but I want to let our podcast family know that I am officially the associate editor for HBCU content for the media brand Clutch Points. It is a huge opportunity. Clutch Points has 150 million page views a month, 2.7 million likes on Facebook, 200,000 followers on Twitter, 700,000 followers on Instagram. Like, they are doing it big. They have a big footprint in the sports space, and they want to cover more HBCU sports content. They've actually had this job up for a year. I saw it last year. I didn't apply for it last year because I wanted to focus on growing HBCU Pulse and getting the SiriusXM radio show and all the amazing things that we did in the fall. But when I saw the opportunity to apply to be their associate editor of HBCU content again, I knew I had to shoot for it. It's an amazing brand, an amazing page. Already, I've written two new articles. I wrote an article about Dr. Charles McQuillan and what he said at SWAC Media Day about the media rights for the SWAC and how some of the ESPN Plus games actually got more viewership than the games that aired on TV. So definitely go check that out. And also, I did a written version of my editorial on why Boston Richie was wrong to shoot his Send a Blitz video at FAMU. And I got a little more detailed and I wrote about it, and it's on a bigger platform. So hopefully it can be seen more by the masses to understand where we were coming from for the folks that said it wasn't right. But I'm really excited for this opportunity. This is like the culmination of my 6 years seriously in the HBCU game, because I started in 2015, but we started HBCU Pulse in 2017. So to have this amazing platform with Clutch Points and all the amazing things that they're doing, and the platform it affords me to elevate HBCUs and shift the discourse and really put out a lot of important conversations and also highlight our student athletes, not just the bigger schools. So it's going to be a lot of amazing content that's coming up, especially during the football season. And I couldn't have done any of this without you all. So if you're listening to this right now, I appreciate you so much for rocking with us and supporting HBCU Pulse. And make sure to head to clutchpoints.com and head to the HBCU section, bookmark it. You can favorite it on your Google Chrome. We open a new tab. You can go to the following tab and see Clutch Points and see what we're talking about, and definitely tap in. And of course, for lifestyle content and political content, we're going to be on HBCU Pulse. So y'all make sure to tap in with that. And we look to grow that Clutch Points HBCU brand and make it one of the biggest sports brands in the space. So I'm super excited for that. But all right, that's it for me. Thank you all for listening. Here's my interview with Jonathan Wallace, former Grambling State University SGA president and championship winning football player, who was in the book, The HBCU Experience, the Grambling State University edition, that's available now on Amazon.
HBCU. They know just who we are. Pulse Radio.
We got Jonathan in the building. Jonathan, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing well. Blessed for this opportunity and just glad to be here to be able to share.
Man, listen, you're a champion, man. Like you got the championship ring. You was SGA president, man. You was doing it up on the yard, weren't you, man?
I don't regret anything from my Gremlin experience, which was why when I was approached about writing this book, I was like, it's about time to put it on paper. I've told the stories for a couple of years for some people. And I'm starting to get a little older now. I've been out of undergrad about 7 years, so it's becoming lost on some people, but I'm glad to have published it in the book.
So before we get started with the interview and talking about your HBCU experience and the book, tell us who you are.
Man, Jonathan Wallace, I'm a quiet, and people who are watching this probably live, like, he's not quiet at all. But if you don't know me, I'm a very reserved person, laid back to myself. Grew up in a small town in Louisiana called Rayville. Population is very, very small. It's about 45 minutes from Grambling. Third generation HBCU graduate. Very, very proud of that. Only one in my family to graduate from Grambling State University. So I take pride in being as successful as I am at my school, especially when we play our rival schools. But I was always the kid who was able to balance being an athletic and also being in the books, and had a strong upbringing from my family, my sisters, my parents, grandparents, cousins, aunts, uncles. They were always on me. I'm one of the younger ones in the family, so I always carried a lot of weight of trying to make everybody proud of me. So that's me. That's me. I'm a very simple person.
You're a Grambling State University alumnus, and you wrote in the book, The HBCU Experience, the Grambling State University edition about your experience. But how did you choose Grambling? Like, was Grambling your first choice?
It wasn't until about late junior year, early senior year of high school, where I really became interested in, that this is the path that I'm going to go down. Understanding where I was athletically and also academically. On the academic side, I probably wasn't thinking about Grambling as my first choice, but from an athletics standpoint, which actually started with them recruiting me in baseball before football, which really caught my interest. Shout out to former head coach James Cooper and the current head coach Davin Pierre. Those are my guys. They started recruiting me, and that's where my interest really peaked. And then I did more and more research, and I actually speak about this in the book. Once we got to my senior year, before I committed, I went to a football game and saw, like, it was very simple. They didn't have a kicker. And I was a kicker growing up in a small area, which a lot of people knew who I was in high school. And I was like, I see a need. There's a void there. I could walk to Grambling State University right now and be a starter. And so that's one of the things that interests me. But the relationships I developed with the football coaches, the then head coach at the time, Doug Williams, still love that man to death for giving me the opportunity to come to Grambling. Didn't take much selling since I grew up very close to Grambling. I was familiar with the campus. I was familiar with the program, the history, and I understood the shoulders that I would be looking up to for the people who made the G what it is now. And I'm proud to wear it on my chest today.
So when you came in, you were coached by Doug Williams, right?
Correct.
So we're going to get into your experience, but I got to ask that. So you got Doug Williams, who was the first African-American quarterback to start and win the Super Bowl MVP. Like, honestly, Doug Williams is a legend. He coached at Grambling before in the first stint, won SWAC championships. So how was it playing under him?
It was a brief stint, but it was more so about the relationship and him not coming with that baggage, the positive baggage that he has with him about, this is why you should come play for me. He never really made it about himself. He was always about, these are the opportunities that can be presented to you. He was very straightforward with me in the recruiting process, letting me know that, yes, you're a high academic achiever, and whatever academic scholarships you qualify for, you can have that on top of your full scholarship for football. And so he was somebody that never downplayed being smart, playing two sports, if that's what you want to do. But I want you to come to Grambling State University and experience it. So the relationship that I still have with him to this day, and his son, DJ, man, I'm forever grateful for it.
I love it. So that was your freshman year, right? Like that. Like, so he was your coach during your freshman year?
Correct. 2013.
So listen, that's a seamless transition into you talking about your freshman year. So tell us about your freshman year experience at Grambling.
Yeah, man, I was very excited to get to Grambling. I enrolled in summer school, as most football players do. They had to go summer session one, summer session two. I got there summer session two, got a couple of classes under my belt and some workouts. And then we transitioned into the beginning of the football season. And for me, it was a little bit different pace, a larger school from like my hometown, which is very, very small, just different environment. I was just trying to find my way, but I knew eventually I would settle into who I've been my whole life. And it started off a little rocky. First two games, you know, we dropped those games, and Grambling was actually coming off of one of the bad years in the program's history. And so I was like, this has got to be the year we get it back on track. And then after the second game of the year, that's when Coach Williams was let go. And a lot of turmoil started at Grambling, or became aware to the football team about what was going on. And so we're going through the season, still dealing with things. And it was a challenge. I mean, I was 18 years old, not knowing right from left most of the time, but I still kept my head down, going to practice every day, showing up, going to classes, still meeting people, you know, trying to have that true freshman experience. And it wasn't until we got to the boycott, where we actually didn't go play Jackson State, that was that October, that was really the point where I had to question myself as to what path did I want to go down, trying not to be distracted about what was going on, but staying positive and focusing on the future. And shout out to my teammates from back then, man. If 2013 didn't happen, 2016 wouldn't have happened. I'll definitely say that. So that was really the foundation to what my introduction to Grambling State University and HBCUs in general as a college student really was. So it was a lot of adversity, sure, but it was a lot of positive that came from it. And once we got through the fall and we had a coaching change and they brought in Coach Broderick Fobbs at the time, there was a new energy on the campus. There was new energy within the program. And I had to question myself, is this where I want to be? Do I want to stay at Grambling, or do I want to pursue other opportunities? Do I still want to play football? You know, those thoughts definitely went through my head. But I stuck it out, and I'm glad I did that. And so fast forward to that spring semester, when we have a new coaching staff, we're going through workouts, classes are getting a little bit more challenging. I advise you never to take macroeconomics at 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Don't do that. I had a great professor. He worked with me, and I was able to pass that class. But nonetheless, a lot of things started to change. I started to settle into my own self and develop more friendships and relationships that way. And things were on the upswing, so much so that I started showing my gift. I played piano, so I'm musically inclined. And as a student athlete in college, it wasn't a lot of time to do a lot of things. But if you read my chapters, you see I got a lot of stuff done because I wanted to do it. And I even won a talent show. I played in a talent show that spring. And when I say the auditorium, they backed me up. A lot of the athletes, the teammates, man, that made the end of the first two semesters really, really positive. So once we got to spring 2014, it was on and popping.
Hey, like, you ended off with a bang. And I got to say this too. I got to say this is that, like, you never take any class 8 a.m. All right. You know what I'm saying? Never take any class between the time of 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. unless it is just necessary. I went to Fort Valley State University, so 8 a.m. for you was 9 a.m. for me. No 9 a.m. classes, no 8 a.m. classes. If anybody's watching that's going to college or goes to Graham, don't do it. That's a liability in your life. All right. But I'm glad he worked with you. Let's talk about your sophomore year. So what was sophomore year like for you?
So sophomore year was very, very positive. Again, a lot of the momentum had carried over from spring 2014. So we get to fall 2014, and it starts off a little rocky, that football season, where we start 0-4. And people are like, oh, new coach, but same old stuff. Here we go again. And I'll never forget the first game that we won that year. We went to Jackson State. And so a part of the penalty in 2013 was that we had to travel to Jackson State 3 straight years in order to make up for that. And so when we went to Jackson State, they were coming off of, they had just lost the SWAC championship 2 years in a row. So they were the powerhouse in the East. And here we were, hadn't won a game in 3 years in conference. And we get there and we upset them. And it puts the SWAC on notice. And that started the streak of 7 straight games that year. And there was a lot of pats on the back. We knew y'all could do it. Internally, we know what they mean by that. But to the rest of the world, yes, we are bringing back the G. We're restoring it. There was a lot of energy. Like, there was, and it's people who are watching who were there during that time, they understand exactly what I'm saying. And I'm trying not to go back there mentally right now because I'll get a little excited. But 2014 fall football season, there was a lot of energy. We just ran out of gas at the end of the season that year, dropping 2 straight and was 1 game away from going to the SWAC championship. But to put that into perspective from where the program had been the previous 2 years, man, we had accomplished a lot. Within the classroom, I actually joined SGA that semester. So I'll never forget it. I remember seeing the flyers about some SGA positions that were open. In that previous spring, I had helped the then Miss Grambling campaign for her stuff. And that was my first introduction to what spring elections are like on an HBCU campus, which it's a lot. But I was like, I don't have time for that. I would never get myself into it. But I was talked into it. My first position in SGA was a junior class senator. Because my credits had transferred from high school and I took classes in summer, I had the course credit to be a junior that semester in the classroom. And that's when I stuck my nose in the SGA and was seeing what was going on. And me always being the diplomat that I was coming through high school, I could always figure things out. And that's when I really got into the politics of HBCUs and wasn't just blinded by just being a student and being an athlete. And that really, really opened my eyes to a whole lot. So that was that's pretty much the gist of what sophomore year is like.
SGA is eye-opening. Like, when you really get a chance to look at, you know, student issues through the lens of a leader and through the lens of someone that can actually make a change. Because when I was in SGA at Fort Valley, like, that's something that can really, you know, enlighten you, especially when you then becoming SGA president. But we're going to get to that. But let's talk about your junior year. What was junior year like?
Yeah, so junior year, which started in fall 14, but most of it really happened spring 15. That's when I started having thoughts after I had seen the layout of SGA and understood the rules and the qualifications on what the different positions look like. That spring 2015, that's when I got together with a couple of people of mine. One of them, Michael Meadows, who I assigned as my campaign manager, really good friend of mine. And he later became the SGA president the year after I did. And so we had a lot of powwows, a lot of talks. And I was telling him, Michael, I mean, it's interesting. It'll be cool. It'll be different. It'll be definitely uncharacteristic of a student athlete. People hadn't heard of it. A lot of people still didn't know me at that time. I was like, Mike, I think I can do it. And he backed me up 100%. And a lot of other people did. They backed me up 100% to the point where I was like, all right, I owe it to the people who want to see something out of me to go ahead and campaign. And so that's what I did spring 2015. And it was a grind. I don't remember sleeping that semester trying to campaign for SGA president while still working out with football. And so I was just out there doing my thing and ended up winning. And it was life changing at that time for a lot of reasons. One, being from a small town, being from Rayville, Louisiana, and ascended to SGA president so fast on Grambling's campus. Two, not having been a student class president, hadn't been a vice president, hadn't even been in the SGA a full two semesters before I even decided to run. It was very uncharacteristic of anybody that has sat in that seat, at least to recent knowledge, but also being a student athlete. And I have to attribute that to the coaches and my teammates, where they didn't say no. They didn't say, no, you're just a student. No, you're just an athlete. They were like, be all that you can be. Be good at what you're doing, but also be all that you can be. And they backed me up. My head coach was like, go for it. And that was a way for him to say, as a head football coach, you can come to Grambling and be more than an athlete and a student. We have student athletes who are in high positions at the university. But it also served twofold with me wanting to leave my legacy at Grambling. You know, I came there with the mission of, I want to win a SWAC championship and I want to be the best student athlete that I can be. And I didn't see SGA in my path, but that was something that was very important to me. And so after I won and started assembling our administration, man, that's when I thought I knew politics when I was a junior. As a junior class senator, got to the SGA president seat, that opened up a lot of doors and a lot of relationships that I still have today.
And people don't understand how political a position such as SGA president can be, because you are essentially a politician. Because I hear a lot of folks say, like, oh, like, you know, it's almost like politics in SGA. No, it is politics, because you're representing a sector of people. And then what you're doing, what you're advocating for, and the programs that you're building aid in improving student lives. And they put you in the position to represent for them and advocate for them. So as SGA president, like, what are some things that you accomplished?
Wow. Well, the first thing that I can say that I accomplished is I had the support of a lot of people, but I also had the wittiness to understand who are the people that I need around me in what positions and why. Being able to articulate that both internally and then to the people that I approached about in the administration, that was the most important thing and the most long-lasting thing that I did as SGA president. And I'm the type of person where I'm not a micromanager. I was somebody that was very structured even at that time and understood what needed to get done. I had reviewed things that had been done in the past, had the foresight to see what was coming in the future, and then just was a listening ear to the student body, and not just the people that I was comfortable talking with, but people that you probably never would approach with some political things that's going on as students. And we took a very, very wide approach as to how we were going to really bridge that gap between students and administration. And I know that's cliche, but there was a gap. There was definitely a gap. I mean, Grambling, if you can go back and research it, we went through a period of time where there's different presidents, different athletics directors almost every year. And we knew that in that process, there were things getting lost in the student experience. And as the student body president, I understood that it was my responsibility to advocate for them. I didn't have to go sit in every meeting and yell and fight and scream. I didn't mind doing it, but I knew that I didn't have to go do that. But the team that we put together, man, it was awesome. And I'm still lifelong friends with those people today. But aside from that, it was more so just about the approach of what SGA means to the student body. And I thought there was a period of time where it kind of got lost on some people where they thought, oh, the SGA president, he just escorts Ms. Gramlin. That's what the class presidents do. They don't really do anything. They say they have meetings. They travel to the games. They spend the per diem in the mall on different things. And that is not what we were about at all. One of the things we did, we went through the Constitution. We understood what our responsibilities were and were held accountable for that. So I really changed a lot of stuff with that. Like, I was a football player. Before I even ran, I knew the people that were running for Ms. Gramlin. I let them know, if I'm running for SGA president, if I win, I'm not escorted. I'm not giving up a year of football to do that. And so we restructured how that worked. And we were just more visible on a political scope, attending meetings, but also being active on committees, making sure that we had votes, we had say, and also just challenging our administration. All right, these are the rules, the codes, the laws. What are we doing? Where are we? And definitely didn't mind sticking our nose into things that they didn't think students had any business doing. There's going to be some people watching this that's saying I'm sugarcoating how I'm saying that, which it can get a little rowdy. And we did, but that was necessary then, as somebody would say, that was good trouble.
Yeah. And like what you said about how, students will think, like, oh, like the SGA president is just a figurehead and they don't really do anything. They just sit back and they'll walk at the games and they'll just have this clout. But the SGA president does things. They stand for stuff. And an SGA president is in rooms, really SGA representatives in general, are in rooms advocating, and SGA members don't get the love or the clout publicly unless you see a grandiose program, unless you see, hey, this is on social media. So I totally feel you with that one. Me being an SGA, I totally feel you in that one
I can give you one example of what you're actually saying about SGA being figureheads and not really getting credit. So there was a situation in the spring of 2016. So we got to the spring semester where our university, it was very public that programs, budgets, everything, like we're not in good shape. And as an SGA, we felt like that's a message that really needs to get to our students. And so we gathered around as the SGA and we sat down, put our heads together and were like, okay, what are we going to do? We have these monthly town hall meetings for SGA and we invite administrators to come on campus to share, to come to our meetings and share. And we said, we need a different approach. And I was very, very particular about how I wanted it done. But I also got out of the way and let the people who were best at that really do the planning. And so there was a young lady in SGA that said, how about we send a message out through the campus alert text message system? And we all looked at each other. We was like, that's a great idea, but how do we do it? If you're ever on campus and you want something done, push it through the students, it'll get done. Okay, so we sent an alert out and all it said was, there's a meeting in the nursing building auditorium on this day at this time. Everybody has to be there. It's mandatory. And that went out into the entire campus. So that was all the deans, all the faculty, all the staff, all of the students, understanding that we didn't have a building on campus that was large enough to accommodate them, but we wanted to see how many people we could get to the meeting. And at that meeting, we had all of the VPs, all the deans, the faculty senate, the university president, anybody you can name on that cabinet, they were at the meeting. And thankful the president, he made it a point because he, at that time, he didn't want to be embarrassed about what was going on. We called the news outlets. We wanted everybody there. And when the story hit the news outlets about the meeting happening, it was as if the university administration called the meeting. And as SGA, our people, we took offense to that. So my then chief of staff, he calls the director of communications in the president's office and rips her to shreds. I won't say any names, but understanding that this is not y'all, this is our work, and we're not going to let y'all take credit for that. That was an instance where SGA, they usually don't get the shine, but at that moment, we had to let them know, no, this is our meeting. We invited you. But nonetheless, it was packed. It was informative. I can't say if much came from it, but they did know, people did know that our SGA, they're doing some stuff. They're not just sitting back and taking pictures and going on recruiting trips. Like they're really doing some work. And so that was one of the most memorable moments as SGA president when it came to representing our student body that I can share with
you. Hey, it does sound memorable. Like you made that happen. And then that idea of the campus alerts with the text message, like that's something that's so brilliant because it's like everybody's not on social media. You know, everybody doesn't read the emails, but everyone has a phone. So like you just reach out to them through the phone and they're going to get it. So I think that's brilliant. But got to ask you about this before we talk about your chapter of the HBCU experience, the Grambling State University edition. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to talk to me about that 2016 year where Grambling won the SWAC championship and then the Celebration Bowl. Y'all had my guy who I was a big fan of, Devontae Kincaid, like that man there, dual threat quarterback making it happen. Like y'all were like that, you know? So tell me about that year and especially about the Celebration Bowl.
Correct. So from January to December, everything within that year, those 365 days, man, still to this day, was the best year of my life. And I don't know if you've seen it on social media, but every few months I'll see it that says it's just something about 2016 that was just the best year on the universe. So it was our destiny. Like I said, 2016 wouldn't have happened without 2013. So we get to the 2016 football season. And as we're seniors this year, and we had lost the SWAC championship game in 2015, and we came back as seniors and was like, hey, there's no losing this year. We were so afraid to lose that we didn't even want to experience it. And as a senior class, I've never been a part of another group that has ever been that strong. And we policed everything. If you want to really study championship teams, you have to study the locker room. It's not really about what coaches are doing, X's and O's and game plans and recruiting. It's about how that team is built. And so that was just our approach. So the only game we lost that year was to Arizona, which was a 21-31 loss, which I still won't go back and watch that game. It still hurts me to this day because we had a 21-3 lead at halftime. But if you go back and look at the scores of that year, our closest margin of victory was 19 points. Everybody we beat that year throughout the regular season was by 19 points. It was just an incredible experience. We didn't want to lose, and we wanted to make sure that we left a lasting print on that Grambling State University football program, because we owe that to everybody ahead of us. Before us, there had only been maybe one graduating class since the year 2000 that didn't win a SWAC championship. And so we was like, it's not going to be us. We got to leave with a ring. And we get to the championship game. We roll in there. We're 10-1, and we're the favorites. We went undefeated for the second straight year in the regular season, and we're playing an Alcorn State team who was beat up, who would have a first-year head coach in Fred McNair, and they weren't even supposed to be in the game with us. And we look up, we're down at halftime, 17-0. And we were like, oh, I don't know what we're going to do. But when we got to the locker room, coaches didn't have to say anything. We already understood we still had 30 minutes left to go out and win a championship. And that's what we did. That's actually one of the games I got hurt in very early. And the team that we all willed together and found a way to win that game. And so moving on to the Celebration Bowl, not understanding the pageantry of what the Celebration Bowl is now, or knowing that 8 years later in its existence, we'd be the only SWAC school to have that championship. But when we got there, it was lights out, all business. Now, the final score was 10-9. But when I say that was a heavyweight fight, that was a heavyweight fight. And we were fighting for our lives. We were fighting for everything that we had worked for all 4 years, wanting to leave the G on the top. And so I kick a field goal to put us up 10-3 in the third quarter, I believe. And then in the ensuing kickoff, I tear my quad. And that's a pain that I promise nobody ever wants to feel. I still have the video in my phone from when I tore it and can still feel it every time that I think about it. And so I'm laying on the ground and it's like, yeah, I'm done. Like I can't get up right now and go back into this game. And understanding how tight the game was, you knew it would come down to special teams. But teammates stepped up again. And so we get to the fourth quarter. North Carolina Central scores a touchdown to make it 10-9. And everybody's looking around like, they make this extra point. It's a 10-10 game. We're either going to have to go down and score a touchdown, or we're going into overtime and going to have to figure it out because we don't have a kicker to kick an extra point right now. And when I saw the flag happen on the play and they had to move back 15 yards, the way our special teams blocked for a field goal had been, since I had been there, I was like, there's no way they're going to make this kick. Either he's going to miss it because the moment is too big, or we're going to get it blocked. And that's what happened. We blocked it, and just the emotion that went over myself and everybody else on that sideline, understanding the magnitude of what we had just accomplished in such little time. Because this was only our head coach's third year there. It was amazing. It was amazing. I still have the moments and the pictures and things of me just laying on the ground, throwing the confetti up and down. Man, I absolutely loved it. But that's what we wanted to do. And I feel like had it not been for 2013 and the people that went through what we went through, 2016, we would have been just another year in Grambling football, which 2013 also shaped me into what I'm doing now, still working in college athletics, because I didn't want anybody else as an athlete to ever experience that.
Wow. Like, that is a story that I honestly did not expect to hear. Like, we got exclusive here, because when the celebration happened in 2016, that was fall 2016. So I was a sophomore, because I came in fall 2015 to Fort Valley. So I was a sophomore, and, you know, I was a basketball guy. And then, you know, there's some folks that are more so basketball guys and football guys. And I'm definitely more of a football guy now, college and NFL. And I started to really watch HBC football more and more outside of Fort Valley. And I witnessed as many of the games as I could on that national level, it being on ESPN and the SWAC Championship and the Bayou Classic. And I saw a little fraction of that magical run. I did not see the Celebration Bowl because I didn't understand the magnitude of it at that time. And it's crazy just to hear you talk about it. And you know it like down to a science. Like that's crazy. And I got to say this, because there's been a lot of talk about the Celebration Bowl numbers. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, pontificate and prognosticate too much because of the Deion Sanders effect with this and that. People know how I feel about that if they listen to HBC Pulse Radio. But that was the most viewed Celebration Bowl. 2,723,000 viewers on ABC. Most viewed Celebration Bowl number one. Okay, I just want to put that out there. The SWAC championship winning team, Grambling, wins that Celebration Bowl in front of a 2.7 million viewer audience on broadcast television. I just want to say that, just to let that breathe. You only got to say, now I just want to say that that's the one, not 2021 and not 2022. Even 2022 was really good. No. Anyway, we're gonna move on to the book. I just want to clear that up. Okay. Yeah. So I want you to tell me about your chapter in the HBC Experience, the Grambling State University edition.
Sure. And the name of my chapter is A Play for President. And it encompasses my journey from 2013, how I was recruited to get to Grambling through 2016, and even a little bit about me graduating with my master's there. And it just walks from year to year, from 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, all the experiences that I had and moments that I was able to fit into 1,500 words, because as you can see, I've probably said over 1,500 words on this interview. But I wanted to make it an experience to where if there's someone younger reading that, whether they're an athlete, whether they're a student, whether they have SGA aspirations, whatever you want to be, I wanted to put my story in there for people to read and be able to experience what I experienced just through those words. There's a lot of excitement. I'm sure there'll be different editions of the book. Maybe there's one just for football players that played at Grambling. Maybe there's one just for SGA presidents. I don't know, because I have a lot more to tell about that story. But in my chapters, most of which in this interview I've already shared a little bit about, I want people to really understand that I'm a third generation HBCU graduate, so I had it in my blood. But what I got to experience for myself is something that set the foundation for where I want to go and what I want to do in life. And I'm not ashamed of it at all. I wear the G proudly. The plate is still on my car. I got Grambling stuff all in my home. I talk about Grambling at work. Like, people know that Jonathan Wallace graduated from Grambling State University.
Let everyone know where they can find you on social media.
Yes, man. On Twitter and Instagram, I'm at jdub7 underscore. On Twitter, I think it's 2 underscores. On Instagram, I believe it's 1. Both my pages are private, so I do screen people just because people are weird and pages get lost and you have to have the two-way authentication. But on Facebook, I'm just Jonathan Jada Wallace on there. You can find me on there. I'm not hard to find.
Man, listen, I really appreciate you coming on. Definitely excited to read your chapter, man, and great stuff. You a legend, man. You a champion, man. You left out with that ring, man. And it's just great stuff to you, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Like what you hear?
Yeah.
Subscribe to HBCU Pulse Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, head to HBCUPulse.com to stay up to date on what's going on in the HBCU community. Thank you for listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.